Hi, everyone. This is your host, Amy Geckel, and we are here with entry 12 of the Eating Disorder Diaries, a podcast about my 16-year battle with bulimia and my life in recovery. Except today, we're not really talking about that. Let's talk about anorexia and binge eating disorder. I've really wanted to do an episode like this because if you listened to the last episode, entry 11, my fiance and I talked about how critical it is to educate yourself about eating disorders if you are the partner of someone who is suffering. And I go back to my why behind this podcast, and my goal has been to reach one person and to make them feel less alone. And there have been so many of you that I've been able to connect with and meet. And I think a lot of you who have suffered from bulimia or are suffering have really been able to relate to me. And I've done a lot of research on bulimia because I can relate to the hell that it is. But I can only relate at a higher level to someone who's suffering from anorexia or even binge eating disorder. So I wanted to do my research. In this episode, I'll talk about what I've learned from studying anorexia and binge eating disorder and other types of eating disorders. I'll talk about ways that I can draw parallels to my own experience and ways that I've learned that you can get the help that you need. So without further ado, let's get into entry 12. Let's talk about anorexia. First of all, let's catch up. I feel like I have a lot going on in my life right now. I would officially consider myself in my wedding planning season. And we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, but we finally made moves. We've been booking vendors. If you're listening to this on the day of the release, it's finally August 1st. Holy shit. Time is just creeping up on us like always, but yeah, I'm recording this at the end of July, and by the time this episode comes out, I have already been dress shopping for the first time. My parents are coming into town this week, and it's their anniversary. I think it's their 38th anniversary, which is amazing, but yeah, I'm flying my sister in as a surprise, and I figured since she'll be here and so will my mom, which never happens, we just go dress shopping. So yeah, it kind of works out. I don't really have a dress in mind at all. I love the look of like low back, simple, elegant, maybe lace. I don't really have an expectation of finding the one right away, but figured I don't want to miss out on trying stuff on when both my mom and sister are here. Just missing my mother-in-law, Suzanne. Wish you were here. So yeah, I'm excited, but I think I'm putting some unnecessary pressure on myself with trying a dress on or having thoughts about what my body should look like, and I'm really trying to sit with myself and understand why I'm having those thoughts. I think at the end of the day, while I don't engage in eating disorder behaviors, which by the way is the biggest win of my entire life, I'm so proud of myself for that, but yeah, while I don't have the behaviors, I do still have to fight thoughts from coming through. And it can be exhausting because for my whole life, I've told myself this narrative that I have to be small. And now the thought is, if I just had 2 more weeks to eat cleaner before this dress fitting, things would be better. I would feel better about myself, whatever it is. It makes me think of Kim Kardashian trying on that Marilyn dress and like gloating about losing 18 pounds in a couple of weeks. And that's what we're told as a society. So I'm really trying to acknowledge that these thoughts that I'm having are not welcome and recognize that I've formed this pathway in my brain through repeated thinking throughout the years and based on what society is telling us, and that I deserve better than that. I've talked about it a lot in the show that I've been able to change my thoughts. And the way that you can do that is by consciously replacing your previous thought with a new thought until a new pathway is formed. And that's how you start to wire yourself to think differently. So I'm trying. I think while I wish I didn't have the thoughts at all, I can take a step back and acknowledge that I've come so far. I'm still healing. I'm learning to love myself. I'm on this journey. And I think that we can all do better about acknowledging just how much our society is kind of screwed with us in thinking that we have to be small. We have to be thin. Being thin is better. My best friend and I have been talking about this a lot, and we're going to do an episode soon here talking about it. So stay tuned for that. But with that said, let's talk about what we came here to talk about today. Anorexia, binge eating disorders, other eating disorders. What are they? According to an article from Psych Central, there are 8 types of eating disorders recognized by the Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. The 8 types are pica, which is where you eat non-food substances like chalk or soap; rumination disorder, which is where you repeatedly regurgitate recently eaten food by spitting out, rechewing, that type of cycle. Then we have anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorder, avoidant and restrictive food intake disorder, or AFRID, which is characterized by severely limiting your diet and eating only certain kinds of food. And the last 2 are other specified feeding or eating disorders, or OSFED, and unspecified feeding or eating disorders, or UFED. Some types of OSFED are atypical anorexia nervosa, which is similar to anorexia nervosa with weight loss and other nutritional or medical side effects. But with atypical anorexia, the person is at average or above average body weight. While I can only speak from the perspective of someone who has suffered from bulimia, I think we can all agree that the eating disorder isn't really about food. I think what a lot of us who suffer or who have suffered from eating disorders have in common is that we've used behaviors to numb rather than feel and sit with uncomfortable feelings. Statistically, in Colorado, where I live, it's reported that 10% of Coloradans have been diagnosed with an eating disorder. That number actually scares me. Outside of opioid abuse, eating disorders, specifically anorexia, have the highest mortality rate of any mental illness. This fact alone made me want to do more research into anorexia. So I went to Google and I typed in anorexia statistics. This is what I would suggest that someone do if they themselves suffer from anorexia or if they have a loved one who is suffering. It's extremely important that we educate ourselves with what's out there and that we keep talking about this. This is something Brendan and I talked about. We have to educate ourselves about eating disorders. I'm going to read you a few stats from an article from the Center for Discovery about anorexia, starting with the best known contributor to anorexia nervosa is body dissatisfaction. Anorexia is slightly less prevalent among people of color, but when present, it takes longer for them to receive a diagnosis. Only 1/3 of individuals with anorexia receive treatment for it. People with anorexia nervosa are more likely to die by suicide than the general population. 53% of people with eating disorders such as anorexia nervosa also have an anxiety disorder. Anorexia nervosa is more likely to cause death than other eating disorders. And a lot of the time, studies on anorexia fall short, from people undermining the disease or crediting it as a white woman's disease, a phase, something we all go through as a society. A lot of the time that couldn't be further from the truth. If you're struggling, you know this. Our science and our data collection often reflects our biases as a culture. As a society, because we perceive that eating disorders impact mostly women and mostly white people, we fall short in conducting studies on men, transgender people, non-binary people, people of color, Asian Americans. When we fall short like this, this means there are less people receiving treatment. Think about it like this. The average amount of funding spent on anorexia research per affected individual is just $10. Compare that to the $900 that's spent per affected individual on obesity research. We need to do better for all of our populations. We need to do more research about this serious disease. So why do people get anorexia? Like I just said, this article states that the best known contributor to anorexia is body dissatisfaction. But I think it's more than that. It's definitely unique to each person with how long it lasts, how severe it gets. It could be partially a control thing. For me, I go back and think about the types of shame I discussed in entry 2. We talk about internal and external shame, with internal shame being uniquely predictive of bulimia. And again, this makes sense to me because I hated who I was for so many years because of the trauma that happened to me. And then all of my, let's call it, corrupted behaviors that happened after that. So the bulimic behaviors were used as a way to pick apart the way I felt about myself versus this external shame, which originates outside of the self and basically involves perceiving that others see you negatively. And this external shame can be uniquely predictive of anorexia. Remember what I said about shame narratives, which is a story that you tell yourself over and over again, so much so that it becomes a core belief of yours because it's something that you repeat to yourself almost every day. If you're consistently telling yourself that people perceive you as overweight and that that's a bad thing, that people will accept you more if you were just a little bit thinner, if that's going on in repeat in your brain, then chances are you have that legitimate pathway occurring in your brain and you have to break it. And while I've not suffered from anorexia by definition, I've definitely had bouts of restriction with food in my life, but mine was always coupled with the eventual binge eating and then purging, which leads me to want to learn more about binge eating disorder and how it's defined and categorized, because I feel like it's so similar to bulimia in a lot of ways with the binge eating on food, but without the purging, maybe it tends to be a little bit more overlooked, because while binge eating disorder can still be a debilitating crutch for the person who's suffering, it doesn't involve that behavior of making yourself vomit or excessive exercise or whatever it is. So people might not take it as seriously, even though it should be. So binge eating disorder is another eating disorder that can be caused by a combination of genetic, psychological, and sociocultural factors. We can all feel full once in a while, holidays, parties, whatever it is. But when excessive eating feels out of your control and starts to become a regular occurrence, that can cross the line to be considered binge eating disorder. Signs of binge eating disorder are eating until feeling uncomfortably full, eating large amounts of food even when you're not hungry, feeling guilty or disgusted with yourself after eating, eating alone because you're embarrassed of how much you eat. Just like with all eating disorders, you usually can't tell by looking at someone if they have binge eating disorder. But when you do live in a larger body and suffer from binge eating disorder, oftentimes you're facing a weight stigma when trying to access medical services and psychotherapy services, and sometimes you can be dismissed with instructions to diet rather than getting treated for your eating disorder, which I can only imagine can be extremely distressing and just cause your cycle to continue to worsen. There are ways to get the help you need for binge eating disorder and for anorexia and for bulimia and for any of the other eating disorders we've discussed today, and in a lot of ways they coincide, so let's talk about them. You're listening to Entry 12 of the Eating Disorder Diaries with Amy Geckel, and we'll be back right after this break. If you're like me and love podcasts, you've probably considered starting a podcast of your own. I can tell you that starting this podcast has been one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. I use the website Buzzsprout to upload all of my shows and get my episodes listed in every major platform. Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch a professional podcast. When I conceptualized the idea of my podcast, I had no idea where to get started. I bought a mic, wrote some episodes, but then what? Buzzsprout has tons of guides to help get you started, from marketing your podcast to monetizing it to optimizing your SEO. You also get a website where you can link your social media handles and get detailed analytics to see how and where people are listening. Podcasting isn't hard when you have the right partners. Join over 100,000 podcasters already using Buzzsprout to get started on your podcast. Following the link in the show notes lets Buzzsprout know I sent you and gets you a $20 credit if you sign up for a paid plan. Thanks for supporting the show, and let's create something great together. Welcome back to Entry 12 of the Eating Disorder Diaries. Okay, so let's talk about treatment options for all of these eating disorders. I'll start with bulimia and what I've personally done. I've talked about this a little bit already, but to recap, I've been in and out of therapy for decades. Yes, decades, plural. I'm 30. I journal daily. I try to meditate daily. I go to support group. I listen to recovery podcasts. I've recently started seeing a nutritionist, And I haven't really talked about this, but I went with a goal of educating myself more about my nutrition. And I've actually taken away a few major things that I want to quickly talk to you guys about. The first being mindful eating. So for many, many years, I hid my meals. I would eat in private, or I would eat in public and then go eat more in private, and I would scarf it down. I was numbing myself. The concept of mindful eating is being present with your meal. No distractions, no phone, no TV, but actually chewing and being grateful for your food. Besides the obvious with chewing helping your digestion, it can also help you eat slower. I learned it takes about 25 minutes to signal to your brain that you're satisfied. So eating large amounts of food really quickly like I was, chances are I was overeating, and mindful eating really helps with that. Like, you can embrace more textures and temperatures. You can adjust the flavor, add hot sauce, add ketchup, whatever you want. It makes your meals a more special time. So that's been really helpful for me. Another thing I've learned is that we should be making an effort in our meals where it makes sense to have a protein, a produce, a grain, and a fat. I could do a whole episode on this because I love to cook, but for me, this was a good reminder that if I'm having a salad, I should be adding something like oil for a fat. I should be adding something like quinoa for a grain, whatever it is. Since I've started making an effort to do this with my meals, I've noticed that I'm way more satisfied and not so snacky. And that actually makes me think of another thing that she said, which is snacks are okay. Snacks are fine. We should have snacks. But my issue isn't with snacking. My issue is with grazing, having a bite or two here and there, grazing over the food. When I'm cooking, I'll be grazing. I'll be like tasting here and there. And I end up eating so much of it that when I put it on the plate, I'm not hungry anymore. So for dinner, I'm either overeating or I'm just not hungry. So again, just being mindful of what you're eating and when you're eating it. She also taught me about the concept of diffusion, which is essentially like when a thought comes in that's negative, we don't want that to infuse in our brain. We want to diffuse it. Imagine a stream with a little leaf going down on the stream. Picture your unwanted thought just getting up on that leaf, floating down the stream, floating out of your brain. It diffuses out of your brain. So that's something. And then lastly, something with my nutritionist that's really helped is helping me with more positive self-talk. And something I struggle with is, and honestly have always struggled with, is my stomach. And I don't think that's uncommon, but I've always been bothered with the way it looks. Again, going back to what society has ingrained in us. But we know that the neuroscience that I've used to help myself heal by consciously replacing my negative thoughts with positive thoughts has really helped me. But it almost felt like I was telling myself when I'm having a bad thought about my stomach rolls or whatever, and I replace it with, oh my God, I love my stomach. I look amazing. Just kind of felt fake. So she's encouraged me that I don't have to be thinking, oh my God, I'm a supermodel. But instead, when those bad thoughts come in, I say something kind about my stomach instead. Like, thank you, stomach, for still functioning after putting you through 16 years of eating disorder behaviors. Thank you, stomach, for always helping me digest my food. Thank you, stomach, for keeping me alive and living this life. And that just feels so much more attainable and realistic for me. So that's my nutritionist. Things that I didn't do to heal from bulimia that I wish I would have are going to a more intensive treatment. I think that would have helped with healing faster and possibly getting on some type of medication at a time that I needed it. I've said this before, but I'm pretty big on not taking medication for myself when I don't have to. But I do think there are times it can really help, of course, coupled with other psychotherapies and more holistic treatments at the same time. But if medicine can help you curb your eating disorder behaviors and you want to look into that, I'm of the opinion that you should look into that. Okay, so treatments for other eating disorders. A lot of commonalities are getting into therapy and getting into support groups and seeing a nutritionist, but you can also have an entire team that works together. If you have anorexia, you can have a nutritionist that talks to your therapist that comes up with a plan for you. You can go to treatment programs and your entire team can consist of therapists, dietitians, nurse practitioners, other medical providers, and care technicians. You can go to group therapy. And I know this is so much easier said than done, and it can be expensive, and you can't just take a break from life and expect to come back like normal. But if you're considering this right now, things probably aren't normal for you. I personally haven't met one person who's regretted going to some type of treatment program. In my support group, I've also heard about scholarship programs able to provide financial support. There are options out there for you. I've spoken with people who have gone to treatment for anorexia before, and when they're done, while they don't regret it, sometimes recovery, they don't like it. I can only imagine bodily changes, weight gain, but you have to remember your why. You went to treatment for a reason. That number on the scale should not be indicative of your happiness. I can use that reminder myself sometimes. I think no matter what eating disorder you're suffering from, one of the most important things you can do is to not suffer in silence. Eating disorders are not weird. They're not embarrassing. Are they taboo? Yes, because our society doesn't want to talk about them. But each day at a time, what I'm going to do with this podcast is continue to talk about it. I will link all of the articles and everything I've referenced today in the show notes, so please check those out if you're curious, and stay tuned for segment two. I'll be right back. That first segment was helpful for some of you out there. I don't want to speak in too much detail about something I've not personally been through, but I've done enough research and I've connected with so many people out there suffering from a wide variety of eating disorders at this point that I wanted to have an episode bringing awareness to more of them. Nobody wants to have an eating disorder. You're at war with your brain. And I think it would do a lot of good if more people realized that. With that said, let me give you my final thoughts for segment two. We have a recommendation and a positive self-affirmation. Okay, my first recommendation is an influencer. Her name is Heather Robertson. I found her on YouTube, and she has the best and most aesthetic workouts I've done on YouTube. And by aesthetic, I mean I literally just like her background. But I'm in the middle of doing her glow up challenges. She does 7-day weekly challenges from full body to HIIT to Pilates. I do them in my living room. I currently have a pause on True Fusion. I've talked about it in another episode, but I can't fathom doing another heated workout for a week straight in this now devilish Colorado hot summer. So I've taken a break on that. I really do miss it, but I'll be back in the fall. And the workouts that Heather has are really doing the trick in the meantime. They're all mostly 30 minutes or less. I just roll out my yoga mat in my living room. I get my 8-pound weights and get her done. It's super convenient. Okay. Also, have to recommend the Barbie movie. Guys, it was so good. I put on pink lipstick and a pink dress and went with my girlfriends. I didn't know what to expect, and it really exceeded my expectations. It was lovely. So that's my recommendations. My positive self-affirmation today is that I love that I'm type A. It's never been a question that I'm a type A personality, but it's really shining through with my wedding planning mode that I'm in. And it's honestly keeping me very organized and in turn very sane and at peace. And my type B fiance, well, we can thank him for writing the address for one save date. Thank you, Brendan. Okay, you guys, next entry comes out on August 15th, and I am already bursting at the seams as I'm recording this. I haven't even had the interview yet, but I connected with the most amazing people ever, and I'll be picking their brains, and I can't wait for you to hear what they have to say. So stay tuned, and I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. This podcast was written and produced by me, Amy Geckel, with music from Coma Media. You can follow me on Instagram for updates at The Eating Disorder Diaries. And if you want someone to talk to, you can DM me on Instagram or email me at TheEatingDisorderDiaries@gmail.com. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, and I'll talk to you in the next episode.